And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, what do you think about shooting the messenger? You know that story, right?
Yes.
I presume everybody knows the story, but did you ever imagine that it would be a staple of the American government to shoot the messenger?
Well, with Donald Trump, the abnormal is now the norm.
Well,
that's how he operates. It's a corollary to his psyche. You can never have bad news. You can never have anything that diminishes his image, even if it's true. So he's got it. I mean, look, he used to go around, you know, pumping, pretending he was a guy named John Barron, remember?
Yep.
And giving press releases to people. And in his first term, look what he did. You remember he took a Sharpie and he changed the course of a hurricane? Or something like
that.
But
the hurricane didn't know that.
Well, details here. But that's what he wanted to do. You can't, it's all, and the whole presidency is
You remember
all,
during COVID, he said that if we didn't test for COVID, we wouldn't have as many COVID cases reported?
Right.
Which is exactly true. He's right. If you don't look, you don't see.
Right. But this is part of the 1984ism too, about controlling the messages, and who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes, type of stuff.
Yeah.
2 and 2 is 5 because we say it's 5, and then everybody. The problem is that the Republican Party, the Republican leaders, have shown that they really have no backbone. They will not stand up for this. They will find reasons to go along with this stuff. I mean, you know, what we're talking about here is the fact that the labor statistics came out this week, and they were not good in terms of jobs. Not only
they were a disaster. Well, it turned out that the jobs that the economists thought had been created when they had a chance to look with hindsight, which is 100% accurate, they discovered that 40% of the jobs that they thought had been created had not been created, and there was a disaster in the job market.
Right, over 250,000.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that there's always three sets of numbers. There's the estimates, and then there's the first report, and that's always juxtaposed to the estimates. But then there's the revision.
Right.
And people in normal times don't even pay attention to the revision because we're always looking forward, not right. backward. But this revision was so significant that it drove the stock market down, and Trump doesn't like that. So he fired the messenger, the person who was in charge of doing this stuff.
And also because it apparently, upon analysis, the drop in the job numbers was almost completely attributable to the tariffs. So in other words, even if Trump is yelling lower the interest rate so that we can have more investment, this disaster didn't occur because of people's inability to borrow money to finance capital expansion. It resulted from the fact that businessmen refused to do capital expansion because they had no idea what the business environment might be, and yeah. because of the tariffs. That's the real situation. So there was this enormous actual loss in jobs, which hurt working people.
Right. Now, the other thing is, going forward, we don't know who's going to take over, but are they going to report the real things? Or are they going to be, you know, it's the story. Who's going to tell the emperor he doesn't have any clothes?
Yeah, exactly.
and everybody's afraid to tell him.
That's right.
And I know my son said this could be a complete disaster. He says, because everybody in the economics field relies on the numbers. And if you can't rely on the numbers, of course, you say, well, obviously the past numbers weren't very reliable, but at least when you correct them, they should be reliable.
But the corrected numbers were reliable.
Well, they are.
Yeah. You know, yeah. But now you cannot trust the so-called corrected numbers. Because who will take the job?
Right.
Except somebody who said, I don't care. I'll tell him what he wants to hear. That's yeah. who'll take the job. Nobody else will take the job. And everybody else knows that. You know it. I know it.
Sure. Yeah. The question is, you know, and the average Joe on the street doesn't really get into this unless it affects them. You
but
know,
it does affect them.
Yeah, well, you know the definition. The recession is when my neighbor loses his job. Depression is when I lose my job.
Right, exactly.
That kind of thing. But it is being seen in the heartland. They are realizing that things are not as good as they seem, or as the stock market has been.
Well, the Republicans have a plan for that. They know how to handle that. MAGA knows how to handle that. And that is a very simple plan. Don't allow people to vote. Make sure to rig the elections in such a way that it really doesn't matter who votes for whom. The result is predetermined because we arrange the districts in such a way that we can't lose no matter what the story is. And no matter what the district looks like, it could end up looking like a zebra or a giraffe. But that's what we're going to have. And nobody's going to tell us it's illegal, and we're going to get away with it. And they're doing it now down in Texas, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've done it in Wisconsin. They've done it in North Carolina. And they've done it in Texas already. But they're because the next election looks like it will favor the Democrats and the Republicans only have a 2-vote majority, they have to come up with some other ways of winning seats. And instead of changing policy, or they decided we're going to rig the voting. So with 5 Democratic seats, I heard the statistic this week that Texas is 43% Democratic.
In the vote.
In the vote, with registration or what have you. But the Texas congressional delegation with this would be 83% Republican. So we had a version of that in Pennsylvania until this current Supreme Court got involved. You know, Pennsylvania was always considered a pretty 50-50 state. As a matter of fact, Democrats for a long time held a registration advantage. They still do, but at one point it was almost 1 million voters. But the congressional delegation was 13-5 Republican. And when the last redistricting was occurring, the Supreme Court rejected it and mandated or came up with a different map, and it went to 9-9, which is pretty reflective of the area of the state. Is now, you know, in this cycle, we're having hard fought. Right now, the biggest fight is over the 7th district down in the Lehigh Valley, which they think is very vulnerable. And, you know, we've talked about Scott Perry down in Lebanon County, and Brian Fitzpatrick down in the 1st district outside of Philly. My district, the 8th, should be very competitive, you know, with Bresnahan going back on, you know, 2 of his key promises. And but the Democrats don't have a candidate yet. That's the problem. Charlie,
you know, Bresnahan on his own without anybody opposing him ought to be voted down, because yeah. It's hard to imagine a more open liar than Bresnahan. Bresnahan is the sponsor of a bill, not the only one, but he's one of the sponsors of a bill to prevent Congress members from trading stock, right?
Right.
He trades stock. He admits to trading stock.
This week
he said, if I don't trade stock, I'll go broke. What will I do with my money? At the same time that he's got a bill in, Congress members shouldn't trade stock. Now, how does he figure to get away with that?
Well, he may not. Now, he tried this week. He had this a constituent meeting with certain handpicked constituents who patted him on the back for helping him. That's his job, is to help constituents, by the way.
Yeah.
But he won't, you know, his town halls are, they're rigged. In other words, they're by Zoom, and you have to submit your questions in advance, and they only pick what they want to have. We saw this week, I forget where it was, where one of the Republicans had the give him credit, having the gumption to meet his constituents in person. It might have been Wisconsin, I believe. And they essentially, you know, told him, you're not a fit for our part of the state anymore. Your voting record is 100% with Trump, and that's not what we want.
Does that mean that they're going to get rid of him?
Well, it depends on how they're gerrymandered in Wisconsin.
Exactly.
And they want to do it in Texas. And so Gavin Newsom is talking about going against, you know, coming up with something in California that would offset the Texas plan. The problem he has is that California has a mandated nonpartisan commission set up these things. And what he wants to do is have a vote before the election that says we can, just for this election, we could put that plan aside because of what Texas is doing is not fair, and we've got to make it fair. They also want to try to do something up in New York, but New York has a law that says you can only redistrict once after the census. So I don't know where they're going there.
DeSantis has just called for a 5-year census so that they can redistrict Florida, make it even more one-sided.
Yeah. And you know, this is so, gerrymandering has been going on for a couple hundred years. That's where they got the name, you know, from Jerry, Elbert Gerry.
Right.
But who had a district that looked like a salamander. So it was gerrymandering.
In Massachusetts, right?
Massachusetts, right. But the Republicans are just focused purely on power. They don't, they're not, they know they can't win on policy on many of these issues. So they want to be able to continually maintain minority power on this. And of course, this is nothing new. We've been talking about this stuff from Nancy McLean, you know, Democracy in Chains, for years. This is their MO, but it's gotten to the extreme. They've gotten more and more desperate as they've gotten more and more extreme, because on the extremes, they're not winning elections. You know, you put a Herschel Walker up and they don't win an election they could have won. Virginia, you know, they went to the extreme with Glenn Youngkin on certain things. And now it looks like we're going to have a Democratic governor again in Virginia.
The Republican campaign has collapsed at the moment.
Well, they have a terrible candidate.
And the Republican people are saying that Youngkin has to take over the campaign. But how could Youngkin take over the campaign? After all, the candidate doesn't want to relinquish control of her campaign.
No. And then we have North Carolina with ex-governor Roy Cooper, very popular, has come out and said, I'm going to run for the Senate.
Democrat.
And that puts that seat, which is a Republican, pretty much in play and most likely to flip. So we'll have to see what happens there.
South Carolina looks interesting. We're not talking about a flip there.
No.
But you're dealing with one of the most sleazy politicians in the history of American politics, Lindsey Graham, up
right.
for re-election, being challenged by the guy who headed the Project 2025 for the Heritage Society.
Yeah.
So in other words, the most extreme right winger discovers that the guy who can be bought on every day of the week and is prepared to sell himself every hour of the day isn't secure enough for them. They need a better guy.
Right.
What are the poor people of South Carolina?
Well, I've always said nothing good ever comes out of South Carolina. There was only one exception, and that was the late husband of one of the women who works in our office.
Nice.
He was a nice guy. But outside of that, you know, when it came time to write the Declaration of Independence, they were the ones that insisted that slavery stay in it. They were the first to secede in the Civil War. It was their senator who beat up the congressman from Massachusetts and almost killed him. You know,
in the 1860s,
in the 50s or 60s, 50s. And then we had, or 1840s even, and then, you know, Strom Thurmond, right? The Dixiecrats, that was all South Carolina. And it's interesting because a lot of people from the North are moving to South Carolina.
Doesn't have a big population.
No. But people like places like Myrtle Beach and what have you. But anyway, you know, I want to mention something else. We talked about killing the messenger. Or shooting the messenger. This week, the Smithsonian has one of its museums is American History Museum, and they have had an exhibit on impeachment of the presidents. And of course, they had things about Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton, and something about Nixon, although technically he wasn't impeached. He was going to be impeached. He resigned before he was. And they had Donald Trump, who was impeached twice.
Well, the only one who's ever been impeached twice.
Lo and behold, what happened? They removed the Trump part of the exhibit. You know, as if it didn't happen.
Right.
Now talk about 1984. I mean, George Orwell, they ought to have a George Orwell exhibit there. I said, Rhonda and I have a friend. This lady is really gutsy. I would, if she lived in Washington, I expect her every day to go over to that exhibit with a sign, you know, saying Trump was impeached twice. Yeah, he doesn't want you to know it. I mean, this is the kind of thing that's going on.
But did you see how they explained removing the Trump information?
Do tell.
Well, they said that upon looking at the exhibit, they discovered that it was written in 2008. And so they felt that they should revise the current exhibit to conform to the original 2008 information.
That was before Trump was impeached.
Ran for office, right.
Right, so we...
I can't argue with that. I can't even make sense of it. I don't know what the hell they're talking about, but that's what they said.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and it's right out of 1984, is the Republicans have a war on information. That's why they have this war on education. And this week, we learned that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is going to fold.
They did fold. They announced that they are closing at the end of the month.
They've laid off most of their staff, and then they're going to whatever. They don't have any money. So all those kids that learned things about Alphabet from Sesame Street, right? Or science from Bill Nye, the Science Guy.
Well, it's important to understand what the CPB does. The CPB does not run radio stations. What the CPB did was it was in a sense, the fiscal intermediary. It got money.
Right.
And mostly from Congress, from the American government. And right. It parceled out the money. It administered the granting of grants to the 1,600 radio stations, mostly in rural areas like our area, to allow those stations to broadcast, to give them the money they needed to broadcast. Even so, even with those grants, most of the stations spend an enormous amount of time begging for money to make up what they need. They don't get 100% of the budget, but they get a lot of the budget. There used to be a part of that that provided equipment, but they cut that out years ago. So it was, you know, this equipment is very expensive. Anyway, that was cut out years ago. So it's not even that. It's just the operating expenses for programming, administration, and so on.
Right.
So but the rural stations will be wiped out.
Yeah. I mean, if you watch some of these shows on public broadcasting, and you'll see that you'll see that they talk about their sponsors, and they'll have this foundation or that foundation, and then they'll say, and a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I think Ken Burns's stuff.
All of it. That's right.
It has a big
that's right.
Great series on the Civil War or on the Brooklyn Bridge or on baseball. His latest one is going to be on the American Revolution.
His latest one is not going to be if he depends on the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Oh, I think it's already been put together, but we may not have a next one.
But he's got to sell it, and they have to therefore be, people have to have the money to buy it.
Right.
Well, I want you to know that even though the CPB, did all that stuff, it wasn't so easy to get a CPP grant. There was a lot of political activity required to get the grant. If you, I know this because after all, our radio station at one point tried to get these grants. If you didn't have the explicit support of your local congressman, you could not get a grant no matter how big you were, no matter how many listeners you could demonstrate you reached, no matter how interesting your programming content was. But if the local congressman didn't weigh in on your behalf, you didn't get a grant. So it was always political.
Right.
But it was, you know, it was political in a kind of traditional sense to reflect the local power structure. The MAGA people decided that for some reason the Republicans throughout the country aren't left-wing enough, so they couldn't be trusted, and just wiped the whole thing out. And that's what they did.
Yeah, they want to control all the news.
Well, not have any news.
Yeah.
Just not have any news. After all, that's the easiest way to control it.
Well, they want to have some news, but it only wants to be their news.
Breitbart. You can have Breitbart.
Breitbart or Fox, or
well, even Fox isn't good enough. One American News,
ONN, OAN rather, and those other ones. By the way, and of course, all of this is it's all connected. Get control of Congress, so you cut out the money. Questions about who you can fire or what reasons, and then it goes to the courts, so they have to control the courts. We have now in our area, the Third Circuit, the Senate approved narrowly 50-48 Emil Bove, Trump's lawyer, to be sit on that circuit. He's only in his 40s, and he could be there for years, although they say that he's preparing him to be the next Supreme Court nominee. I don't know.
But Bove is interesting, not because he was Trump's attorney, but mainly because, to me anyway, mainly because he told the department when he was the assistant, the deputy attorney general, which he was up until last week, he told the attorneys in the attorney general's office to be prepared to violate court orders if they disagreed with their position. The DOJ's position. If they went against what Trump wanted, they should not be followed. And there were at least three of the lawyers who quit because of that and who made testimony that that's exactly what he said, and the Congress, the Republicans in Congress, just ignored it.
He lied about it.
Yeah.
And the Senate said no big deal, including our senator from Connecticut, Dave McCormick.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeah.
But yeah. But we've been talking about things, and you know, even in prepping the show and talking about it yesterday, one of the big things that seems in all of these other activities that that seemed to have slipped by was the statement by our Treasury Secretary Bessent about Social Security, and he was being interviewed, and he came out and said that one of the things that the administration wants to do would really be a backdoor to privatize Social Security.
Those were his words, right? Backdoor way to privatize Social Security.
Yes.
An exact quote.
Yes. Now, for years, of course, the Republicans have been wanting to get rid of Social Security, but they won't admit it. you know, Rick Scott came out and said that, the senator from Florida, you know, a while back. But it's out there now. And it just sort of got, you know, buried in the ether of all these other things that are out there. And I think that also is a factor, that Trump hits us with so many things, big and small, that you just can't focus on anything. And nothing sticks because you're always on to the next show. You know, from day to day, there's a new show every day. I think they said that that's what Susie Wiles, the chief of staff, is in charge of, is arranging the next show. But it's, you know, we'll see what happens with this. The one thing that has stuck, of course, is this Epstein thing. Mainly because it was the Republicans that created it, the conspiracy theory, and we saw this week that Ghislaine Maxwell, after having this confidential talk with a representative from the Justice Department, all of a sudden gets moved from the prison she's in to a much more laid-back prison, so to speak, a camp-type prison in Texas. One wonders what the deal is. I mean,
The deal is that she's not going to say anything about Trump's involvement. That's the deal. And there was a story in the New York Times on Saturday to the effect that whistleblowers within the FBI said that the FBI just redacted the Epstein files to get rid of any reference to Trump. That's interesting.
Yeah. Again, you know, either you destroy the message or you kill the messenger.
Exactly. All right. That's it for this week.
Yes.
And try not to get killed so we can bring useful and important messages to our listeners next week.
Yeah. You say we don't have. Well, it's messages from us, not from corporate sponsorships.
No.
Or the Koch brothers or whatever.
That's
behind
right.
The scenes.
Where people are going to have to, in the future, really look to people like this radio station to get any useful information, because they're shutting down so much of what is now in existence.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're into August, the dog days of August. So,
all right.
You've got the dog. So,
I got the dog. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.